B.B. Shook and Jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to another edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder. Glad to be here. Glad you're here. Going to have a little fun tonight. So, how many days to Christmas? We can count them now on one hand, right? No, we still need two hands. Okay.
Do we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we do. Yeah.
Yep. Say hello, Tim.
Hello, Tim. Hello, everybody. It's great to be back after missing, seems like, the last 2 weeks, I know, and I don't think you had a show the week before that, so I've been gone so long, I don't remember how to even punch the buttons right.
So, do you have to punch buttons?
Well, if I'm trying to get on here to do this Skype thing, yeah, when you called me, I had to punch the little button that said hello.
Okay.
And, you know, all that.
So good, we're a little short-handed tonight. Hugh's out on one of his escapades. We're used to that, though. It's no surprise anymore. He takes about 19 vacations a year.
Yeah, 19.
And this is Does he really? Is it
yeah, this is number 18, so he's got another one to go.
Yeah. And if nothing
else, better hurry.
He'll have his knee replaced in the middle of all that.
Yeah, and then he'll move to his hips and other joints and things. Boy, he gets a lot of time off, doesn't he? He does.
He does.
He does.
Yeah.
He does.
He does. So hello, Jack.
Hello, Jeff. How you doing? Hello, man. Bobby. Hello, Tim. Hello, Cody.
Hey, Jack.
Where's Cody? We have Cody.
I saw his name pop up, so he's here somewhere.
Yep, there he is.
He's hiding in the shadows, I think.
He's coming up right now.
Yeah, man, looking forward to another. Is this the Christmas show?
It's a Christmas show.
Are we going to sneak a little Christmas music?
Yeah, we'll sneak a little Christmas
music.
All right.
Tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe White Christmas by the Drifters.
I have to.
Especially for the people in Pennsylvania.
One time, me and Hugh sang Blue Christmas.
Y'all did, didn't you? What happened to Cody? He just dropped off. All right, I'm going to try him. You guys talk for a minute.
Well, not too much news coming out of the Cup Series this week, except Danica looking for two new rides.
All right.
Jack, you're a terrible. That is an insensitive remark.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that is insensitive.
But that's what you got to admit, that was funny.
Of course it was.
Was it original?
I hope so.
Only an insensitive person would laugh. Yeah.
Oh, my. I laughed. It makes me insensitive, right?
Anyway.
That was good right there now. So I can't get Cody added. Try again, Cody. Try calling me, and we'll try it that way. For some reason, when Cody calls me, or when I try to add Cody, I got to drop Tim so I can get Cody on and then get Tim back. So we're going to see what happens here. Hang on.
So where did you see that, Jack?
See what?
About Danica and Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
I think it was on J-Ski.
Yeah,
I saw it somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where.
It's telling me that I got Cody and Tim on there now, but I don't see Cody. He's not there.
I tell you, he's hiding. The boy's hiding.
Yeah. Cody.
There's something wrong with that boy Scott, I'm telling you.
Well, it's that connection in Dawsonville.
Something wrong with that boy Scott.
But seriously, Danica, not on the Cup scene, does affect the star power.
Oh, yeah.
The,
as Dale Jr. will.
As Dale Jr. will.
And possibly Matt Kenseth. Although, yeah. You know, some people like Matt Kenseth.
Tim, I'm going to drop you and try to get Cody on. Hang back.
That's fine.
I think it's the way that Matt Kenseth, quote unquote, retired or had to retire. That I think that's the sticking point.
Hi, Cody.
If he had gone out on his own agenda and own terms and so on, it might have been a different story. It's kind of had a cloud hanging over it, you know. Yep. And he could theoretically show back up, I guess, if a ride become available. And I guess it's not so much the rides that's available. It was the financial angle.
Cody, you there?
Or the realities of modern NASCAR.
See, it tells me Cody's there, but he's not talking.
Oh, I heard something.
That tells me Cody's there, too.
It added him. It showed he was there, but he ain't talking to us.
Patrick said that's the best Danica joke he's heard.
Oh, I love that, man.
Do you?
Yeah. That's really good, Jack. Yeah. I might tweet that, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
In the tweetosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's figure out what we can do with Cody here.
How about now?
Oh, there he is.
Holy moly.
He was muted. Cody. He was muted all this time.
He's been muted for about a month, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. What's up, Coder?
Oh, nothing much. I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Got a great time of the year to
be talking Jack's joke?
We can about racing.
You're old enough to take this. Now, did you hear Jack's joke?
No, but I'd like to.
Jack's Danica joke. Tell it, Jack.
Well, Cody, the biggest news coming out of the Cup Series this week is Danica Patrick's looking for two new rides.
That is funny.
Yeah, they say you laughed.
Yeah, and now I'm insensitive. Throw me under the bus.
Oh my goodness!
Why not?
I'm not electable.
I love it.
And apparently, I don't think the IndyCar ride is working out too good either. At least as far as Chip Ganassi was concerned, that's not getting off the ground.
Of course,
either.
That's what I must have meant by that joke. Cup and the Indy. See, what else could I have possibly meant?
Those are two rides right there that she's not going to have.
Oh,
maybe
no.
She's looking for three.
She's eligible for the Clash or whatever they call that pre-race in Daytona.
Yes, she is.
Since they manipulated the rules to get her in.
She would be the most well-known name in the field that's not going to be there.
They say she is. That's what I heard.
She is going to be in the race.
Junior's eligible too, but I don't know if he would participate or not.
I don't know. That's kind of a touch-and-go thing with him, I guess.
What a year from now, who will we be talking about in the Cup Series?
William Byron.
It won't be.
Yeah, I mean, who will be? I don't know.
William Byron. Chase
William
Elliott,
Byron.
Bubba Wallace,
And who's the guy that's taking over Junior's ride? Who is that?
Garrett Jones. Is that
no?
No, it's not Garrett Jones.
It's somebody else.
Alex Bowman. Yeah. Let's take it over. I think, you know, with those new talent, those new drivers coming in, younger drivers and the talent that they have, I think we're looking at a pretty good 2018. I am very excited about the Daytona 500 because, you know, Chase almost won that last year, except for the lack of a little bit of gas. He would have won that thing. So, you know, it's wait and see what happens. I will be watching to see.
I think Chase is the heir apparent to the Dale Earnhardt Jr. position.
I do, too.
Someone to fill that void, absolutely. Although I don't think he's not there yet, but he's the obvious choice to be the whatever that is.
He's already got the fan base. Now,
and the pedigree and the background and all of that. He's the next best thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there whether he wants it or not. He is the next Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, Chase has done a lot of things right. I mean, obviously his father being in Cup made a big difference, but he's also started kind of at the bottom and worked his way up through several short track series. And you know, brought that fan base along with him and brought the fan base that likes his and father. You know, and
he's about the last example of that. Yeah. These young drivers, they just sort of fell out the air as far as the casual fan is concerned. They don't know where they come from, where Chase Elliott did have right. some exposure on the local level. So, I read where Kurt Busch has finally re-upped with Stuart Haas, although Monster is only a full-time sponsor for one race or something like that. They're an associate sponsor for like 24 races. So,
I would say that this would probably be his last year, and then Cole Custer would take that car for 2019.
I think that's a safe bet.
And where Monster winds up and all that is anybody's guess.
Yeah.
Do you really think they're going to back out of it? Because I think from what I've read from four or five different sources in this past week alone, they're not happy.
Well, they shouldn't be happy. Their name doesn't get mentioned much. I mean, it really doesn't when you think about it. It's not like even when Sprint had it. You heard Sprint, Sprint, Sprint. You don't hear much about Monster Energy.
Well, Monster...
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but they do. Well, the announcers don't always say the Monster Energy, blah, blah, blah.
Nope.
Huh, I hadn't even noticed.
Oh, it's too confusing with Monster Trucks.
Yeah.
Well, you got a point there.
Monster,
see, I hadn't even thought of that, but yeah.
Unlike Sprint, for example, Monster has a lot of experience in sponsoring sporting events and how that works for them and what they're looking for. They already had some experience of how that's supposed to feel or how they want it to feel. Unlike Sprint, who didn't have a clue about how any of this is supposed to go. But,
Who knows?
Well, Sprint, overall, I think Sprint did a good job in what they did for the number of years that they did it. I didn't hear that much negative about Sprint, you know.
How many years did they have? Was it 10? Was it that
It was
long?
Like from 04 to now.
To now, yeah.
Or to 16.
I think it was a 10-year contract, and then they re-upped for a year or two beyond that.
Of course, it started as Nextel.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Nextel, but then they acquired Nextel. So
that's right. I had forgotten the little next. Yep.
It wasn't technically Sprint all that time.
Right, correct.
But it was Sprint for probably the majority of half of that time,
At least.
Well, you know what really bugs me is when they go back and talk about the champions from the 50s are now Monster Cup Energy champions.
Yeah, that's kind of
crazy.
And
all those Winston Cup champions are now Monster Energy champions, and God knows what they'll be when Monster Energy leaves them.
Yeah, that's kind of a dramatic convention. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is. It is. And you look at it, you read things, and you hear what Brian France has to say, and you hear what that Brian DeWar, I think, has to say now, and I think, you know, not trying to sound totally negative, but I don't think Brian France can just really get a grasp on what's going on, because when you ask him a question in those press conferences, oh my God, by the time it's over, you forgot what was asked, and you sure did not get an answer.
Well, Tim, I'm sure you have a take on Brian's ring presentation.
Huh.
The Martin Truex at the banquet.
Yeah, and then for him to say it was because they were pressed for time.
Yeah. What happened?
Brian France is the second biggest name at the banquet. You know, of Martin Truex, then the president of NASCAR, has to be.
Yeah.
You have to make time for them. You know.
Well, he said that the network had told them they were limited to 2 hours. Period. That's all they got, and they were running short on time. So he decided.
To run out the back door.
Wherever he was running from, he was running.
You don't know? You didn't see the banquet?
I didn't either.
But Brian France presented Martin Truex with the champion's ring, and literally that was it. He gave it to him and walked off the back of the stage.
Okay.
No handshake, no attaboy, no nothing.
He ran off the back of the stage.
He just run up there, handed it to him, and just turned and walked off the back of the stage.
I mean, 20 seconds, you know, but I had heard that Monster said, we'll take care of all of the sponsorship and all that kind of stuff, but we want to cut it from, it used to be a 4 or 5 hour program to a 2 hour program. So I think that was part of it, but there was something at Homestead. I can't remember what it was. I don't know if he was talking about Junior or Danica or somebody. Best I remember, somebody had asked Brian France in a press conference, do you think NASCAR is in good hands with all the new and young talent? And whatever the question was, he just gave the most roundabout answer without even getting to the point of what the question was, you know?
Yeah.
He probably didn't
hear
it.
That's exactly what I experienced on all the questions he's asked.
Wow.
Monster must be considering all this stuff, too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure all their marketing people are doing all kinds of studies and trying to find out if it's worth it or if they go forward, you know, with it, can they renegotiate or, you know, just whatever. At a lower price, of course.
So. Well, how do you think, do you all really think, looking at it overall, is it worth it to sponsor even at $30 million a year when they're having the poor TV ratings they got, they're having the poor attendance that they have, and it's like people, you just can't get them interested in it anymore for reasons I can't understand. Because I'm still interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of sponsoring it is to get your name out. And if nobody's there or nobody's watching on TV, you're not accomplishing the reason you put up $30 million.
Those are still valid indicators, whether NASCAR will admit it or not. TV numbers and people in the stands are still the benchmark. I mean, you can say, well, they're watching it on their cell phone, but you can't prove that. No. That is unverifiable. So all they've got to go on.
Well, apparently, Bopper, it is not unverifiable because ABC or one of the networks has the capability of knowing who all's watching it on iPads and on cell phones, everything else, because they did a rating statement on that. September or October, they did a rating statement on that very thing. We had so many people watching on TV, so many on iPads, so many on telephones. So they can rate that. NASCAR is just not rating it, or Monster Energy is not rating it.
So they can tell that.
They can tell. That's what ABC said. I'm pretty sure it was ABC.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing coming out this week.
What's that?
And I don't know nothing about it, but some of you all might. There's some kind of acquisition, sales, merger, or all of the above between Fox and Disney.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's who true. Owns what, who owns the programming rights, and how all that shuffles out is a big nebulous topic at the moment. And part of which is NASCAR.
Yep.
The Fox News Network stays an independent entity. Everything else that Fox owns, ESPN, the whole nine yards, is all Disney now. So, you know, whatever they're going to do, whatever they're going to do. I mean, they got DW in the stands, so they got Goofy employed.
So, everything other than Fox News is now under the auspices of Disney?
That is the way I understand it. That's exactly what happened.
If it goes through.
Well, doesn't ABC still own Disney in the first place?
Disney owns ABC.
And doesn't they own ESPN also?
Yeah. Yes.
So
don't
Disney
we sort
owns
of
ESPN.
Get back to where we started?
Maybe.
Yep, I'll tell you.
But still, I mean, why that concerns us is because NASCAR is in that loop. I mean, Fox had obviously the contract, and now if they merge with, you know, someone else, then how does all that go?
Well, I would imagine it would still be a contractual deal where Fox will have to continue for, what if they got it, 6 more years, I think? I believe it's 6 more years. I'm not sure about that, so don't quote me. But I think they've got 6 more years, and I think any part of that contract would still be honored. I can't see Disney giving up Fox coverage of NASCAR racing, because Disney did an awful lot of promotion. I got about 6 of those diecast cars here with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and all on it that Disney was putting out here a few years ago.
Going to be an interesting year. Going to be an interesting few years to follow, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it really will, and it's, I don't know. It's
now, how about Xfinity for the Xfinity series? How long do they have a sponsorship?
I do not know.
I don't know either.
Well, Tim, I read an article in the last day or so, a Kyle Petty article, where he says that NASCAR will never be a mainstream sport. He says that,
I heard a quote about that, but I did not read the article. Uh-huh. But I think it was a mainstream sport. It used to be number 2 in the world behind the NFL. But
Kyle went on to say that nobody now, absolutely, and this was a quote, nobody will sit down and watch a race for 4 hours.
Yeah. I do.
Yeah, I do too. So,
yeah, I do
you
too.
Know I do. Hell, Jeff, whatever he's doing with the music is pumping out on this end.
Jeff's over there playing with his toys.
Yep. Yeah, I'm getting blown away here with the music.
You ought to be here.
Why is it louder?
I guess that's background accompaniment.
Yeah, that's what it is.
What is it?
Is that background accompaniment?
Yeah, it's accompaniment music.
All right.
I'm going to hear some Christmas carols, man.
Yeah.
So I put on Beach Music Christmas carols for Jack.
Yep. He cranked it up.
Yep.
You mean there's such a thing as Beach Music Christmas carols?
Well, when you got the 1950, two version of White Christmas by the Drifters going on, or 54 version, you got a good.
That's
a good Beach Music Christmas.
That's good vintage Beach Music Christmas right there.
There you go.
I'm dreaming of a sunny Christmas. Sunny.
So I'd like to thank Devin Alexander for the Christmas package we received today. Jack and Bobby and I are enjoying the popcorn and peanuts.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Devin.
From Cromer's.
Cromer's, yeah.
Cromer Brothers.
Cromer's is good.
Yeah.
Cromer's is good.
Cromer Brothers Country Ham.
They've had the best nuts in Columbia for a long time.
Jack,
all right, guys, what are y'all looking for doing in the 2018 season? Bob, are you with the Bell and Bell? Jack, what do you got going for 2018? Cody, what have you got going for 2018?
Cody, yeah. Can you still hear us?
Yeah.
One of your hometown citizens is really causing quite a stir in the dirt racing world right now.
Yeah, he sure is. I'll tell you what.
Donald McIntyre, nobody can figure him out. I hope it works,
Donald,
but nobody can figure it out.
I've known Donald for a while back when he just ran Legends cars and Bandoleros. And, he eventually started to do asphalt late models, and he was doing pretty good with it. And, the problem with Georgia is that we just don't have any asphalt tracks, so they made the switch to dirt. I want to say probably about 5 years ago, maybe 6. I remember seeing him get his first win at Dixie Speedway in just a crate late model, and now he's fighting for the Lucas Oil Series next year. The last 2 years in a row, I believe he was the Schaefer's Southeastern champion, which is still a pretty good honor, but now he's going for the top of the top.
But the way that he's doing it is what's got everyone in a it's so atypical. He was with an excellent team, Blount Motorsports, and he basically resigned from that to go off on his own.
Who's that, Cody?
His name is Donald McIntosh, and he's from here in Dawsonville. And actually, I shared to our Facebook page for the Georgia Racing Hall of Fame maybe last week. when he announced that, that makes three drivers currently that live in Dawsonville or from Dawsonville that's going out in 2018 for a national touring series. So you got Chase in the Cup Series, you got McIntosh driving the Lucas Oil Late Model Series, which is national, and then Spencer Davis, he's going to make several ARCA starts next year, as well as more K&N starts, but you know, ARCA being the national one for Venturini Motorsports. So, you know, we've definitely, it's amazing to think of three people fighting for a national level, all from our little tiny town.
Yeah, there's somebody else in Dawsonville too. That's, I can't remember who it is. Somebody on in the late super late model area running out
is
of Dawsonville.
Is it Chandler Smith?
Yes, yes.
I think he's actually from Jasper, which is just the town right above us.
Oh, okay.
But Chase's late model crew chief, Ricky Turner, chiefs for him now. So there's your connection for the day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a lot running out of a very small town in Georgia.
Yeah, on a big scale.
On the big scale,
Yeah, on the big screen.
Well, I mean, I always like to look back at, you know, our older history and see what all we've been able to accomplish. And, you know, from Dawsonville, you know, you've got five drivers to win at Daytona. Actually, six now if you count Chase. He won the Gatorade Duel this year or whatever. Whoever the sponsor, he won the duel race this year as well as the Xfinity race last year in 16. But, you know, you've got all those drivers. And now for back in the day on the beach, that was really nice to get all those victories, for whether they were owners or drivers or what have you. But now we're getting really back into it, and it's just amazing to think that it's really happened to us all of a sudden.
Well, it's a cultural thing to an extent. If that's what your community does, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And you know, you do it very well because the culture demands it. So,
yeah. Well, Cody, do you happen to know what the financial stability status is of ARCA?
You know, I don't, and I don't know how they are still around, because I've heard for years that it's a slowly dying organization, especially with, you've got those rent-a-rides like Venturini, and you know, there's several others around where it's pretty much you just buy your way in there. You know, you don't have to sponsor anything, but you know, you look at their schedule, and they don't really follow a lot of the Cup track schedules anymore. Used to, it was just as big a race as the Busch Series race or the Xfinity Series race. You know, you'd have your if the track, the NASCAR track, didn't have an Xfinity race on Saturday, they would have the ARCA race on Saturday, 500 miles.
That Pocono ARCA race was huge. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, ARCA still runs two dirt track races each year.
They still run the two dirt tracks, but you know, they don't go to Charlotte, they don't go to Atlanta, they don't go, I don't know if they ever done Bristol, but you know, it's just dying down really. They only got 18 races this year, and most of them are, you know, small time tracks.
They are an example of a series with little to no star power.
Yeah.
Not, I'm not saying that the competitors aren't quality, but people don't know them. You know what I mean?
Recognize the
name. There's no name recognition.
Yeah. No, but some of the races I watched last year on TV, they put on very good races. I think competitive.
Yep.
Races.
And they have somewhat of a feeder group because they're involved with CRA in I think it's the Pro Late Model Division.
Which
is a touring series.
They have the flange fit bodies, which Xfinity is going to have this year. Flange fit composite bodies is probably one step away from being the Cup thing too. But you
what exactly does that mean, Bobber?
It is a non-metallic body. I mean, it's not fiberglass, but it's a synthetic, you know, plastic type of composite body, and it comes in pieces. You know, a roof, a hood, a door, and all that, and you literally assemble it around the car. And so to replace, I mean, there's no such thing as beating out a fender anymore. You just
replace
another one. So I guess theoretically somewhere that's an economic thing. Or the other thing is that it you can't tweak it. So you can't tweak composite stuff or bend it and bow it and do all that you can with metal. So I guess it has some advantages.
Now, is the entire body made out of that composite?
I think so. I think the entire body.
Is that the same with NASCAR Cup?
Not now. But it's going to be implemented in Xfinity this year.
Because I'm thinking about all those blown rear tires that tear the fenders off the cars, that tear the quarter panels off the cars. You know, that would not work with composite, right?
Right, yeah.
Seems to me it would just shatter.
Yeah.
Instead of bend or rip apart, it seems like it would just shatter. My question is, even if it saves money down the road of not having to, you know, spend labor to bend out a panel but or what have you, but if you got to replace it, how much is this stuff going to cost? It seems like to me a new material that's kind of unknown would be more expensive, at least early on, than, you know, something that's tried and true.
I think that's a good argument, Cody. I don't know that it will save anything because you can't fix them no more. You just you have to replace components.
All right, so here's another hypothetical. If someone's on the racetrack and they get a tire rub from hitting the wall or somebody runs into them, during a pit stop, you might could pull out your fender from the tire. So now, it's in my mind, I'm just thinking this stuff to be very hard, more like a fiberglass seat, how it's not really flexible, but it's hard. It doesn't seem like to me you would be able to pull it off the tire. And if you did, you might do more damage than actually what you had in the first place.
Well, it would sound to me like if you hit it that hard, the composite stuff will break. If hit hard enough, like plastic, wouldn't it?
It very well could be.
I think it will. Some of the short track series, I think, have been running the composite body for years now. And I think they just break it off.
Yeah. That was a huge issue back in the old Hooters Cup days.
Pro Cup.
That eventually split that series.
Yeah.
Where composite bodies and steel bodies
exactly
became a dividing issue.
Right.
And I forgot how it finally wound up, but that was a big thing at one.
Yep.
It might have been 8-9 years ago.
Yep.
It's not a new topic. It's just new on this level.
Right.
But I think NASCAR is implementing it, so we can see how all that turns out. So.
What else are they implementing?
The 5-man pit crew.
And the new lug wrenches. What else?
Is NASCAR issuing lug wrenches? Is it a standard approved universal lug wrench that everybody has to have
know.
The same one?
I understand. Yeah, I understand. They're going to all be the same. No more JGR super revved up lug wrenches.
So by the term lug wrench, you're still talking about a motorized...
Yeah, the impact.
Yeah, impact wrench.
The air-powered impact gun. There was getting to be some serious bucks spent on research and development of making them faster.
I think with that, it just takes away a lot of your playing field. I mean, like you say, Gibbs, they've always had some of the best pit lane guys, and now if you're taking one away and you're given a mandated air wrench, I mean, that just takes away some of their edge. And it just, I always liked the ARCA series, but I always liked the IROC series, but it really seems like it's turning into the IROC series now.
Yeah, the everything is very standardized now, even the pit crew, you know, the pit crew's equipment, so... And all these things are always done ostensibly as cost-cutting measures, but they usually wind up costing more as people try to circumvent them.
Are there any charters for sale? How many charters do they have? 38
You know, that's a good point. I haven't heard that at all this year.
That is a confusing legal entity that they set up. Like, for example, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, but as I understand it, last year Richard Petty Motorsports had, at the beginning, of, had two charters, but they was only running one car, so they rented out or they leased a charter to somebody else. Now, this year, whoever they lease theirs to is not racing or what, and doesn't need the charter. So Richard Petty Motorsports gets it back, but they can't lease it again.
Well, what I heard they today can only sell is it. Casey Kane is now the team that he's going to be driving for magically got a charter. You know, although I didn't get any of the details, I just heard that Casey Kane's new ride is now a chartered ride.
Well, there was some to be had, but the peculiarities of the rule is you cannot lease one every year. You can't have a charter and just lease it. You can lease it 1 year. The second year, you have to either do nothing with it or sell it. Now, I think at some point, if you hold it long enough, you could start leasing it again, it sounded like, but it was not a... And this is the rules that the Alliance came up with. This is their own rules. That's, and it specifically applied to Richard Petty this time because they wound up with a charter and they can't do anything with it other than sell it right now.
That's interesting. I really haven't heard anything about charters at all in the last several months.
I haven't until today.
I have not. No.
Charters was only valuable if people wanted to get into the sport. Yeah. If nobody wants to buy in, you know, you don't have a customer.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, what happened to the Race Team Alliance?
Well, it sort of went underground, but it's still there.
What happened to this drivers' organization, whatever they called it?
That was part of it. There's been a little bit of activity on that front, and they've, you know, was it Rob Kaufman who was the unofficial head of it, and he was a member of, like, basically the majority owner in Michael Waltrip Racing, and then when that disbanded, he became a partner in Chip Ganassi Racing. And he was all the unofficial or the official head of the Race Team Alliance, but now they've all decided that they need a formal director. It doesn't need to be him doing it on a part-time basis, so I think that, you know, they're moving towards hiring some kind of formal CEO of the Race Team Alliance.
We really need our old buddy, Mr. Barry Dobson, with us tonight. I'm sure he keeps his ear close to the ground on some of that kind of stuff.
I'd say he does.
Yeah.
But all of these complications, sure. the racers themselves have added on top of everything else. They created all this Alliance charter stuff. It's rather convoluted in itself.
Yeah. Well, a lot of things about cup racing are convoluted anymore.
Well, that's true to the extent they start 40 cars now is the maximum they can start. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. I have heard, again, and through the rumor mill, nothing I've seen in print, that they're going down next year to 38. Mm-hmm. You know, without officially announcing it, fields will be limited to 38.
Well, they barely had 38 anyway last year, so it wouldn't make
that
big of a
difference. Well, that's true. I think that's probably one of the reasons that they're even playing with that, throwing it up or running up the flagpole or whatever they'll say.
I think there's 36 charters, right?
God, I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds
right.
There's
a total of 36 charters.
Because there was four open spots.
Theoretically, for the Daytona or for any race.
Yeah.
Theoretically. I think Roger Penske needs a charter this year for his third team that he would have to get from somewhere.
Yeah.
Rent one or whatever. The Wood Brothers are probably going to need, because they never had one. They
had one last year, didn't they?
They rented one.
Did they rent it?
Yep. They missed the criteria to get one when they were handed out. So they've been having to rent one, and they will have to again, although they've got... Paul Menard driving this time?
Yeah. Paul Menard, yeah.
But they still don't have a charter. So.
Well, I really think if they're going to start 40 cars and they've got 36 charters, then I don't think the third Penske car is going to have a problem. And I doubt seriously the Wood Brothers are going to have a problem qualifying for the races. You know, they ought to make it in on speed if nothing else.
So, well, Jack.
Yes.
Did you bring a Carolina race place?
I did. Would you like to hear one?
We should hear that.
Well, I tell you what. I've got one.
Cool.
Actually, the one I've got, I got about 80% through it, finishing it, and realized Dennis Andrews had put pretty much the same thing on Racers Reunion some time ago, but I got a little bit different slant on it.
All right, cool.
Okay, we are going to Dover International Raceway, Dover, Delaware, for the Diamond State 250 Grand American Race, May 2nd, 1971. The second race in 1971 for the NASCAR Grand American Series was at the one-mile paved Dover International Raceway on Sunday, May 2nd, 1971. This was the fourth year for the Touring Series and would end up being the final year in this format. The Dover race could be called somewhat of a, guess what, goat rodeo.
It was on a Sunday?
On a Sunday.
So when, was it a standalone race?
I think it was a standalone. There may have been something on Saturday, but it was probably, I don't know. I did not look that up, but I think it was a standalone.
What was the date?
May 2nd, 1971. All pre-race advertising stated that the race would be open to 43 starters, but most published race results listed 34 starting spots and 34 finishers. But could there have been more starters? There were at least 45 cars entered, and most of those took time trials. Buck Baker won the pole position with a lap of 128.844 miles per hour. Baker was driving a 1971 Firebird. Starting on the outside front row was another Firebird driven by H.B. Bailey. Some race results list Tiny Lund as winning the pole, but that was for the 1970 race. Lund actually started in the 21st starting position after having problems in qualifying. So there's one flub up to start with. No, that's the second flub up, 34 starters or more. Buck Baker took the lead on the first lap and held it for 15 laps when he was passed by H.B. Bailey.
H.B. Bailey.
The big wreck of the day happened on lap 17. Excuse me. That's when Randy Hutchison's engine blew in the second turn, according to some news reports. Other reports say Billy Hagan spun out, causing the wreck. Coy Blue rammed into Tiny Lund.
Hold it. Right. Did you say Coy Blue?
That's exactly who I said.
Coy Blue?
That's who I said. Coy Blue.
From
yes.
Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Up in that area. Also caught up in the wreck was Wayne Andrews, Joe Huss, Don Daniel.
Huss? Did you say Joe Huss?
I said Joe Huss, Bobby. Don Daniel.
Chantilly Speedway.
And one race report said T.C. Hunt. The only problem was with T.C. Hunt was being involved. He wasn't in the race. Or was he? H.B. Bailey continued to lead until Jim Pascal grabbed the lead on lap 42. Pascal was setting the pace in his number 14 1970 Javelin. On lap 160, E.J. Trivette, driving a 1968 Camaro, hit the front stretch wall, bringing out the caution flag. Trivette took a trip to the hospital with cracked ribs. When the race returned to green, Jim Pascal, still leaning and looking like he would go all the way. By lap 226, Pascal had a 5-lap lead on the field. Only problem was that in that same lap, his tire blew and hit the fourth turn wall, ending his day. The new leader was the blue number 30 1969 Camaro, which would lead to the checkered flag on lap 250. Fans were told the winner was Kruger Johnston. But in victory lane, the driver got out of the car with a Tiny Lund uniform, who was obviously not Tiny Lund. The announcer finally got it figured out. The winner was actually Frank Brantley of Savannah, Georgia. Brantley had substituted for Johnston, who had back problems. Brantley won $3,750 for the victory before a slim grandstand of 8,000 fans. Most news reports say Brantley won the race by a 10-lap margin over the rest of the field. They also state that there were only 10 cars of the 36 starters running at the finish. Yes, 36 starters, or 34 starters, as all the results show. Well, T.C. Hunt was not shown as being in the race, but is listed as being involved in a wreck. Then there's the National Speed Sport News report that lists the 15th place finisher as Lloyd May in a 1969 Firebird. Where did he come from? Was there 36 starters? Who knows? It must have been a goat rodeo.
That was probably the most 8,000 most confused people ever in one place.
Absolutely.
To watch that race.
Absolutely. Okay, here's the way we think they finished. The winner, Frank Brantley, driving the number 30 out of Savannah, Georgia, a 69 Camaro, followed by the number 90 of Jimmy Capps, Jacksonville, Florida, and a 68 Camaro. Coming into the third position, the number 87 of Buck Baker, Charlotte, North Carolina, 71 Firebird. Jimmy Vaughn finished in the fourth position, Greenville, South Carolina, 69 Camaro. Bobby Fleming, Danville, Virginia, 69 Camaro. Phil Kendrick, Owens, Maryland, a 68 Camaro. Coming in seventh, Jim Pascal, driving the number 14 of High Point, North Carolina, a 70 Javelin, followed by the best driver from Monroe, North Carolina at that time period, Baxter Price, driving a 69 Camaro. Straub, Louisville, Kentucky, in a 71 Mustang, followed by Steve McWhite, Greenville, South Carolina, a 69 Camaro. Ernie Shaw, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a 68 Mustang. Ronnie Trout, Tallahassee, Florida, a 68 Camaro. Gary Myers, Huntsville, Alabama, a 70 Mustang. Tommy Leader from Seaford, Delaware, a 69 Camaro. Coming in 15th, according to most results, E.J. Trevette, Deep Gap, North Carolina, in a 68 Camaro. Glenn Brewer, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a 69 Firebird. Sonny Hutchins, Richmond, Virginia, a 71 Camaro. Bud Olson, Paulsburg, New Jersey, a 69 Camaro. James Ramsey, Jacksonville, Florida, a 69 Camaro. Coming in 20th, H.B. Bailey, Houston, Texas, a 71 Firebird. Followed by David Boggs, Morrisville, North Carolina, a 71 Firebird. Didn't he run a race with y'all this year?
A bell and bail race.
Yeah, that's right.
God bless him.
Finishing 22nd, Bob Williams, Jackson, Mississippi, a 71 Firebird. C.B. Glenn, Marion, Virginia, a 68 Cougar. Coming in 24th, a name everybody will remember, the number 26 of Richard Childress, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a 69 Camaro. Randy Hutchison, Newport News, Virginia, a 69 Camaro. Stan Starr Sr., Nashville, Tennessee, a 68 Camaro. Coming in 27th, Don Daniel, not sure where he was from, followed by Wayne Andrews, Siler City, North Carolina, a 71 Mustang. Tiny Lund, Cross, South Carolina, 71 Camaro. Joe Huss, Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, 69 Camaro. Billy Hagan, Lafayette, Louisiana, a 68 Cougar. Bobby, your man, number 98, Coy Blue, Cameron, North Carolina, a 69 Mustang. Aubrey Cox, Wilmington, Delaware, a 70 Mustang. In the 34th, and we think it might be the final position, Pee Wee Wentz, Danville, Virginia, a 69 Camaro. So that's how the Goat Rodeo finished on May 2nd, 1971, the Grand American Series.
Also, on that very same day, the Grand Nationals was running at Darlington, South Carolina.
Yeah, the Rebel.
Like, what kind of planning was that?
Yeah. So.
Sounds like a quaddle bomb production.
I told you, it's a Goat Rodeo.
Who was planning all of that?
That was a good one, Cody.
Another quaddle bomb production.
But, when I was doing the research on this thing, I had about four different kind of reports from the same race, and it was like four different people wrote everything different, had drivers that weren't in the race
And to make matters worse, they were wearing the wrong uniform.
Yeah.
Everybody had on a tiny lun.
Nobody knew who he was when he got out of the car.
Excuse me, sir, could you introduce yourself in Victory Lane?
That's pretty much what happened.
You can go by Coy Blue's fruit stand right now, ladies and gentlemen, on Highway 87 in Spring Lake, North Carolina.
So he is still kicking?
Still kicking. Got his old 34.
Why don't you get him on the show one night, Bobby?
I've tried to get him on the racetrack. He is.
Well, let's get him on the show.
Coy Blue, he was a dirt. So was Joe Huss.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Huss was a big dirt track driver.
Bud Olson went on to be a big-time chassis builder of Northeast Dirt Modified.
Yeah, he was big in modifieds up north.
So there was some notable names.
Sonny Hutchins.
Yeah, Sonny Hutchins was there. So there was some racing royalty in there.
I got a friend that used to always pull for Baxter Price. He was probably Baxter Price's only fan.
Go, but give them hell, Baxter.
Yep. Anyway, that's the
way it was. That's pretty cool. Well, they had scheduled their own race against the Rebel 400 or whatever it was, Rebel 500.
But this was the final season for the Grand Americans.
It might have been the final race.
No. They ran, I got 12
and
races.
And then they morphed into the Grand National East. Exactly. Like the next year.
Exactly. Yeah, matter of fact, the next race that followed this one was at Nashville. But Dennis has done a whole lot of these that are posted here on Racers Reunion. Need to look them up.
Well, I'll tell you. I might try
to fill some of the gaps if he left some gaps.
Because my dad was, he was a dirt tracker at this same time, and all the dirt trackers in the world thought, wow, we can race on the big tracks in this circuit. Everybody thought that.
Yeah.
And some of them actually tried it, as evidenced by this race. So, how long from 68 or so to maybe 72 as it's
to 71
final season?
68, 69, 70, and 71
was as a separate entity.
Yeah. And 70, then they ran with the Grand National East. Actually, well, I think sometime in 71, they started letting some of these guys run with the, whatever they call it, the Grand National Series on some of the short tracks because the fields were so short.
There's the big...
That developed into the Grand National East the following year.
But there's the roaring controversy to this day as to that infamous race at Bowman Gray that Bobby Allison won with a Mustang.
Yes.
That NASCAR will not count.
Right.
Although he actually won the race.
Yep. Won't count as a cup race.
Right, won't count as a cup race. So that was obviously, and that's it, they could run a Grand National, a Grand American car, rather. And he did, and so on.
Well, I see why that series ended now. They couldn't keep anybody that could keep records of it.
Well, I agree with you, Cody. I agree 100%. But, you know, it's kind of funny. The whole time I was putting this together today, I was thinking about what Dargan Watts told me several years ago. He was living in Florida, And he used to write all the news reports for Sumter Speedway. Somebody just sent him the finishing order and a couple little sentences, and he'd just fill in the rest. So I think that's what some of this happened. Yeah, I think some of this.
Well, I'm looking at the 1971 NASCAR Cup season on Racing Reference, and just as an example here, the August the 6th race at Winston-Salem, Bobby Allison is listed as the winner driving a 70 Mustang.
Yep.
August the 28th, Grand National race at Hickory, Tiny Lund's listed as the winner in a 69 Canara. So, and here we go again. Tiny Lund, November the 21st at North Wilkesboro, Tiny Lund won that race in a 70 Camaro. Yep. So I don't know if NASCAR counts any of these.
No, I don't think they do.
But apparently, as far as the speedway and the people at the race was concerned, that car took the checkered flag first.
Exactly.
So, for whatever that's worth.
So, NASCAR, I mean, we think they're going through a lot of turmoil now, but they were going through some turmoil back then trying to figure out what to do,
but you
where
know,
they were.
The thing that saved them, there was no media.
Yes.
There was none.
No social media.
There was no media at all.
Yeah, very little media.
On that race, nobody was watching and nobody
and
was
only 8,000 fans in the stands.
Although they would be glad to have that 8,000 now.
Be pretty good.
Can you imagine that in today's media savvy, crazed world of instant results?
I don't want to think.
All right. Well, that ought about finish us up, shouldn't it?
For our Christmas edition.
Unless Bobby's got something.
No, Tim might have something.
The Christmas edition is nearing an end.
So that means
I just want to say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everybody that listens. Everybody's a part of this racing family. It's a great bunch of people. And, you know, I just want everybody to have the very best 2018 and have a Merry Christmas. And Santa Claus brings Eli everything he wants.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. That's cool, man. All right. Cody, how about you, buddy? You got anything you want to say?
Well, just more or less about the same. Just, just Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Just hope for a great 2018 for everybody. Whatever it may be, whether it's racing or whatever you got going on. Just looking forward to another year.
Yep, same here, buddy. Same here. And I'd like to say Merry Christmas to all of y'all and all y'all folks listening. I appreciate all y'all contributing and making these things happen.
Yeah, and I would like to say Merry Christmas to everyone also, and we'll be back when, Jeff? Yeah, January the what?
9th.
January the 9th.
So is that Tuesday? I think it is.
So we're going to take a couple weeks off, Tuesdays off, and hope everybody has a fantastic Christmas and Happy New Year.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah. You know what a Christmas Chihuahua sings, his favorite song is? Christmas Chihuahua.
Let's don't go there.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Bobby,
that's
good.
Pretty good.
I hope they don't commit you between now and January 9th.
Feliz Navidad.
Good night and Merry Christmas. We're about to say thanks for the
Thank you. From the CRN studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is.